Namaste and welcome to Radio Eka. Eka is a yoga and meditation app from India. And our focus is to help you learn the various yogic tools such as pranayam, yoga nidra, meditations, chanting, and asana. The purpose of this podcast is to understand more about these practices and delve deeper into the history, the philosophy, and the science of yoga. If you want to try the app, you can download it from the iOS or the Android stores and also use the code RADIO to get 1 week free access to the app. My name is Priyanka, and you can learn more about me and the other associated teachers with the Eka app on our website, www.ekameditation.com. Hello and Namaste. Today I have with me Dr. Raghav Shah, who is an MD in psychiatry and a director at the Center for Addiction Recovery, and is also the director and consultant at the Department of Psychiatry, De-Addiction and Mental Health Services at Rajasthan Hospital in Jaipur. He is one of the very few doctors in India with a DM degree in De-Addiction. And he is very well known for his work in the field of mental health. Dr. Raghav, it is my utmost pleasure to host you at Eka today. Let's start by talking about your journey and what got you into the field of psychiatry.
Yeah, so it's a pleasure being with you, and thank you for the nice introduction, Priyanka. I have been very interested in mental health as a whole, although I am a medical doctor and have had a journey just like any other doctor through MBBS, then through my MD in psychiatry, and then finally a DM in addiction psychiatry, which I did from PGI Chandigarh. But mental health involves a lot of mental health professionals and people who are actually not mental health professionals also, but into various fields, which can be called as alternative systems and other things, who contribute to mental well-being of people. So I have been interested in the whole spectra, although my specialization is into the medical part of it. So regarding my journey, what got me into this field has been a interest in thinking how I am thinking. So we generally joke in mental health that persons who take psychiatry as a profession, they have some issues themselves. But in my case, it has been that I wanted to understand how we think. And in that, I picked up this specialization after my medicine. And this interest got me into a lot of other disciplines also, like meditation, yoga, and many other systems, like those shamanic traditions and what you call as even occult sciences. So it was like that I wanted to understand the whole spectrum. And I think that's what connected me to you also. And it's a pleasure being in touch and finally having this interesting conversation.
Thanks for sharing that. It's my pleasure. And I'm very thrilled to hear that you are interested in the broader subject of the mind. And you will find, and you may have already found, that our Indian philosophy has a lot to say about this subject, especially in yoga. The sutras from Patanjali, they describe the mental states of the mind in a very interesting way. So let's talk a little bit about your work. What are the things you encounter in your patients on a daily basis? What kind of cases are you looking at?
So regarding my work, as I have done a super specialization in addiction psychiatry, so I have a focus towards managing persons with addiction. This is a very new discipline as a super specialization in India, and we are very few people who are doing this right now. So a lot of my patients come up with issues related to addiction. And what we see is that addiction is not just with substances like tobacco, alcohol, or drugs, or other things, but it's also a lot of behaviors which are harmful to a person, but a person gets addicted to them like maybe excessive mobile or internet use or gambling or compulsive sexual behaviors, shopping, eating. So many things come into the purview of addiction. And as our society is progressing, we are seeing people coming up with a lot of behavioral addiction. So that's a major chunk of people I deal with. And in addition to that, of course, I'm doing all the psychiatric practice, which involves seeing patients with common mental disorders like anxiety, depression, stress-related issues. Like in these days, a lot of stress-related problems are the fallout of the COVID situation. Not just the health impact, but the overall impact on the lives of people that COVID has had. And of course, we have those severely ill mental illnesses like schizophrenia, bipolar, which require a lot of medical management. So this is how we go through our day. And we try to help our patients holistically, that we want to evaluate them comprehensively first, that where do they stand in terms of the severity of their mental issues. And then we decide whom to give medicines and whom to prescribe counseling, therapy. And of course, we do advocate to our patients about the systems like meditation, yoga, and many other approaches which give them a healthy lifestyle. Because that's the prevention as well as the treatment for mental health.
That's really wonderful to hear that more and more doctors like you are recommending yoga and meditation and looking at mental health holistically. So you named a range of issues within mental health. So is there a way to understand the science of mental health, the neuroscience of mental illnesses? And is there a common theme that underlies all these illnesses?
Yeah. So having a very simplistic understanding of mental illnesses in terms of neuroscience is difficult because just like other parts of the body, heart, liver, lungs, brain also has different parts. Brain is not just one thing. It has various structures like cortex, cerebellum, basal ganglia, other things. So in terms of neuroscience, different parts of the brain are implicated in different mental illnesses.
Okay.
Depression, addiction, schizophrenia, they affect different parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. Although there are some common parts also which are involved. And if you want to understand the mental illnesses very simply, I think more than neuroscience, it is the descriptive part of mental illnesses. The most common thread among mental illnesses is a distress or a problem in functioning day to day that a person experiences. And in some cases, maybe the person doesn't experience that, but it is evident to other people and reflects on the life of that person. So this second group is much smaller. These are generally people who have severe personality disorder or who are psychotic. That is, they have a loss of insight or a lack of insight and judgment into their issues. But other than this small chunk, most of the psychiatric patients, they themselves are distressed and face problems in functioning. So it's very simple to understand that if you feel uncomfortable, in distress, or have a problem in your day-to-day functioning, then you should think about that you could have a mental issue.
So day-to-day functioning would be like with sleep, with food, or with your social relationships. Is that what it means?
Yeah. So day-to-day functioning actually means that. So there are different things that you expect from a healthy mind and body, because the problems of mind and body are one. So in most of the mental illnesses, you can see that you have psychological symptoms, like maybe you feel sad more than what you used to, or you feel more that you are overthinking, you are in tension, which is more like a picture of anxiety. But then your body also gets involved as the mental issues progress. You have a problem in sleep, you have a problem in your appetite, you sometimes feel palpitations or sweating, or if just a feeling that you have some issue in some other part of the body. So many times what we see is that that's how people sometimes confuse mental issues as physical problems.
Right.
And they search for answers in their body. Like if they have a headache, you see a common cultural explanation is that maybe you are having gastric problems.
Hmm.
Or if you have a palpitation, that is a raised heartbeat.
Hmm.
Commonly people think that you have a heart problem.
Yes.
But what we see is that mind and body are one. And in our culture especially, people are not accustomed to giving precedence to mental issues.
Yes.
So they try to find out a physical cause for it. But these are some common mental problems or mental symptoms, like you just mentioned, which should be taken care of.
Right. I think you said it. You have said the same thing that we also encounter every day, where people think that they have a neck pain or a back pain, but the actual problem is the stress and anxiety. So how do you approach these patients then? What is the treatment? What is the course of action?
So our approach is first to listen with an open mind to a person, because we don't go in with a bias that a person's problems are basically having a mental or a psychological origin only. We go with an open mind. We give them a chance to first vent out and tell their experience. That is therapeutic also in a way, because telling some your inner feeling, thoughts to a neutral person is in itself therapeutic. So that helps the patient as a treatment also.
Mm-hmm.
And then we carefully analyze that what part of his complaints are psychological in origin and what part of his complaints are physical.
Okay.
So we as doctors take over from there, and then we can address all the problems together. Like just take for an example, a person with depression comes to us. She's a lady in 40s. She's having stressful home situation. She just had a baby maybe.
Hmm.
So those kind of things, we evaluate them fully. We would evaluate them physically also. Like if we suspect maybe there is a hypothyroid condition or there could be some hormonal issues after pregnancy and delivery, we do evaluate for them if we find some clinical history related to that. And for other things, we listen to their experiences. And what we focus is like, if there is overthinking, then what is, does it have some common theme, or it is a generalized kind of overthinking, sometimes thinking this, sometimes thinking that. Then we look for the mood symptoms, with how mood swings, or there is a common depressed mood throughout the day. And then we can talk about the speech, like what is the fluency, how much is the word output that a person is giving, is it similar to what they were giving earlier. So our field is very much a science in that sense.
Right, right.
Sometimes people think that we people in the mental health field make arbitrary judgments, but it is not so. We don't. We have a way of approaching things.
Right.
And after we have made a plan for the patient, then we proceed. And if the symptoms are severe, then we advise medication.
Okay. Very interesting that you have these parameters like mood swings and how they're speaking. It's really interesting. So while we see on national television the number of COVID cases that are rising, right, there is absolutely no reporting on the deeper impact of the pandemic on the emotional and mental well-being of people. So how has it affected your patients who are already not doing well, or, you know, new patients? And what is your sense on the long-term impact of the pandemic?
Yes, deeper emotional impact of this COVID situation. See, actually people are underestimating this. What kind of impact we are seeing on people? So already existing patients are being more stressed. Many of them are relapsing to their previous symptoms while taking the same stable medication doses that they were taking, because stress has increased many times. And a lot of new persons are being added. And the new persons that are being added who have mental issues are two big groups. One is a stress-related group. This group has a good prognosis. They are basically having these symptoms due to the recent stressful experiences of their own or their loved ones or somebody who has died in there, or the, just the fear of not contracting COVID. Many of these people would recover well once this stressful situation is over. And that is what we see, that in a month or two after the COVID situation has relaxed, most of the people do recover. But during that period, many of them do need psychological help because for that short period, they are very distressed. It's almost like before exams, so many students are distressed, but they recover after the exams are over. Whatever may happen, they may fail or pass, but they recover. The second group is that from among these persons who have experienced this stress, good number, it is said that at least around 20% to 30% are going on to develop long-term psychiatric problems. By long-term, what we mean is that even if this COVID stress resolves, they would be carrying on maybe a generalized anxiety disorder or a depressive disorder or obsessive-compulsive disorder. So a lot of new patients are being added after this COVID situation. And the stress is multifold. And what we are seeing is that maybe the health-related stress of COVID would resolve soon, as soon as the wave ends. But the deeper impact in terms of financial security, a general optimism and uncertainty in life, the situation at home where people are spending their time in a single confined space, people have not been having this lifestyle of giving so much time at home among family members, so it's leading to a lot of interpersonal issues in families. So what it is exactly being called is an epidemic within this pandemic. So mental health is an epidemic in this pandemic. And it will rise after the COVID situation has resolved. So that's what we think.
Yeah, that's really, it leaves me with a lot of concern. And like you're saying, right, we launched the app, just a yoga app, right? We didn't really launch it for a specific cause or for a specific problem. But what we saw was that people started using the app for anxiety relief. And that's where it came to our notice, like how this problem is rising, right? It's the fear and the worry is actually leading to the anxiety. And like you were saying, and you're saying that it gets worse after the pandemic. What is it that people can do today? And I think this is my most important question, that there is a curative approach which comes after everything has surpassed, right? And there is a preventive approach. And as a parent, sometimes I find myself wondering about the things I could do today for my child, you know, because these kids are also indoors. They should be doing more physical activity. They should be out there in the sun playing. But they are indoors and they don't get the opportunity to interact with other kids. So social skills are also amiss. So from a younger group also, and as you said, older people who are spending time at home, what are a few things we can include in our daily lives which prevent us from shifting into this, in this zone of being mentally not healthy or, you know, as you said, addictions?
So for parents and elders, what they can do for their children or young people is that they need to be sorted out. Because for children, especially, actions speak louder than words. So most of the problems that are arising in the family situation is because the elders themselves are not aware about mental well-being, what kind of behaviors are required for a good mental health, what is a good lifestyle, what is the good way to think and then present it to their children. So I think rather than focusing on children, the elders should first focus on themselves. That would help children immensely. And for children specific, I think behavioral part is to be taken care of then. By behavioral part, I mean is that many things are to be done without understanding. You can explain, but then you need to inculcate them as habits. Like, for example, you cannot explain your child every day that brushing is important. Right. And after a certain point, it's a rule or maybe a habit that needs to be inculcated. Right. So for children, parents should have a plan of behavior that they should have a good lifestyle. They should wake up at this time, approximately. They should have food at these times. They should have these classes. So a good structure can always help. Especially in absence of school providing that structure. And in terms of the thinking and emotional part, I think rather than making children understand, if we can present a good example to them, they would learn it by themselves, because children are very emotional and perceptive. they pick up what we say very nicely rather, or what we do very nicely rather than what we say.
That's, I think, the message is that you just take care of yourself, at least with regards to children, and they will follow, because that's all we can do. So what can the parents and the adults do, especially with addiction? One is very helpless, right?
Yes. So I think we should start with the preventive aspect of it, because mental illnesses like addiction, once they have developed, then it's a totally different approach to treatment and improvement in their life. But as of now, for the general public, I think more people will be interested in prevention of addiction as well as developing mental health problems.
Nice.
So for prevention, what we should understand is that it is very important to maintain a good lifestyle. Or by lifestyle, we mean a good routine. Hmm. It is very important. Like no matter if the restrictions are there, you cannot move out, go to offices, go to school. But still do not stress your body clock beyond a limit, because our brain and our bodies work well with some routine, because then it gives them a predictability and certainty. So we should have a good sleep time dedicated to us. Before sleep, we should understand that a day spent well can only lead to a good sleep. And this is technically known as sleep hygiene. So by sleep hygiene, we mean that you should begin your day well, end it well, and then generally you end up having a good sleep. So by a good beginning to our day, we mean that we should have a routine for exercise. We should have a routine of starting your day with positive things, like having a good conversation with your family members over tea, and then spending some time with your children. So those kind of things should be there to begin your day with. And then another important part of having a good day is having a plan for the day. So I think we should have a reasonable plan so that we do not get overstressed and anxious as the day progresses, which should include the routine tasks that are there, like our office timing or school timing for children, meal timing. And in addition, we should have some time dedicated to the contingencies that arise, that every day we come across things which should be done, which we get to know the same day only. So if we have otherwise a reasonably good day in terms of our routine, then we will not get overstressed by all the contingencies that arise. And in addition to this, we should always have healthy hobbies, because hobbies or non-work related activities, they give our mind and body a buster to our anxiety and developing all these mental issues. So good hobbies can be reading, can be listening to music, can be spending quality time with our family members. Because spending time with family members, I'm including in a hobby in these current times, is because people naturally don't feel a need to spend time with family members or friends. They are generally busy in their work or in the online world. So they should consciously dedicate effort to doing this also. Creative pursuits can also help a lot, because especially when you have to spend time by yourself, and spending good time with yourself is an indicator of how good you are or how resilient you are mentally. So having creative pursuits like maybe painting or cooking or gardening or anything that you can come up to, that should also help you a lot. And of course, then after these do's, there are a lot of don'ts also. Excessive use of stimulants like tea, coffee, they disturb your mental peace, especially in the later hours of the day, that is evening, at night, should be avoided. And then the addictive substances. Now coming up in a loop to your original question, so the addictive substances, definitely they should be avoided. Many people ask that what will happen if we take it once in a while. So once in a while, what will happen? The answer to that is very simple. Why are they called addictive substances? Because nobody starts them to get addicted. They start with this view only, that we'll use them once in a while. But this once in a while creates a craving for another experience of intoxication, and then you progress, and then it goes on to develop addiction. So best to avoid these addictive substances. and no substance is safer than the other. Nothing like that smoking is safer than chewing tobacco, or occasional alcohol use is better than consuming cannabis, or cannabis is organic product. All these myths should be kept aside, because maybe they might not harm you physically by using occasionally, but they will harm you mentally. And the biggest problem with developing an addiction from our perspective is not that it will lead to a memory loss or it will lead to a health problem. The biggest issue is that it takes precedence for you over all others. So the biggest problem with addiction, especially in people who are in the initial stages, is that this addictive substance use and the behavior around it takes precedence over all your other activities, and this destroys your life in the long run. So I think a very important thing is to avoid all addictive substances. So with these do's and don'ts, I think adults can manage a reasonably good day. They'll have a good mood. It will be a prevention against mental illness. And at the highest level, that is what they should do about their thinking. So for thinking, I guess the answer lies in many things. Medicine doesn't answer much what is healthy way of thinking.
Hmm.
This answer lies more in the various branches of spirituality or other positive psychology approaches, like maybe meditation and other contemplative or other self-realizational approaches. Because finally, at the end of the day, brain is the highest seat of our body. And in the brain also, the thinking part or the cortical part, it also needs a routine in terms of good thinking, not having a reactionary approach, learning to understand how your emotional and moods change. So some focus towards your thinking is also required, so that in as a whole, you can have a good experience of life. So this would be what I recommend the adults, especially in this COVID situation.
Right, that's wonderful. I think the things that you just said about having a good routine, about finding a hobby that gets you to take a break from your other thoughts, and pursuing some kind of spiritual, spiritual is just a name of, you know, self-awareness. So something that really brings yeah. that self-awareness of your thoughts and of how you think, like you're saying, is probably, you know, the core of everything. And what I've also understood through my own journey in yoga is that, like you said in the beginning, the body and mind are so deeply connected. So as you leave the patterns of the body, right, the patterns of the mind also start to break. And that's very approachable to us. So I have personally, exercise is something that I think whether you're in the house or outside, one can walk, one can do yoga, one can do cycling. You know, there's so many different things. Because it's the sedentary lifestyle also is what we see as a big issue in the people that, you know, who come to us, that they just, the laziness that comes in because we're at home and because somebody else is doing the work for us, right? There is going to be a maid or there's going to be a servant. In India, it's so common, right? So that becomes a big challenge, and that just, you know, that cycle just doesn't continue. So having that morning routine that you said just changes everything. And I think we can dwell so much deeper into these subjects about sleep and about exercise and the little impact, you know, the various things, how they add up. About relationships, like you said. But I mean, I think maybe another time we should do that. I think Dr. Raghav is available online. And like he said, reach out and take help, because a lot of people don't do that. They don't realize they have mental health issues. So we can always, you can always reach out to him. They have a very, you know, highly functional center, in the sense that they have a very good team. They have online Instagram pages. I'm going to put the link of that in the description, so you can follow, get these tips on a regular basis. And you know, he's available, so if you want to book an appointment with him, I think that's very much doable online now. So is there a parting message you want to give?
From a practical experience, what I would share is that mental health and mental well-being or as we say, the holistic well-being of mind and body, is a practice. And we generally have a tendency to take it lightly, that maybe we'll see one yoga session and do it, and then we'll do it on our own. Or maybe we would meet, or maybe not meet a mental health professional, and we'll search our mental problems online, and that should be it. So what I would say is that is the beginning only. Because our mind needs practice of healthy ways of thinking, of experiencing emotions. Our bodies need practice of a regular lifestyle, a good routine. So rather than thinking or taking these things very lightly, it would be very nice if you could take help of professionals. And by professionals, for everything, people who are experienced, maybe like for yoga or for meditation or for psychological health and other things, we should meet people and take their help and rather overcome our attitudes of that anything can work. So that should be a message that I would share with people.
Right. I think seeking help from a professional is what we are saying. And I think we feel the same way. And like you said, right, it's just the beginning. And even if you go to one yoga class, and if it makes you feel good, if you can see the possibility of feeling good, right?
Yes.
If you can, yeah. And that opens up doors, which probably people don't have a view in future. So, you know, I have myself gone through some anxiety in the past. And when you are in that situation, the feeling that it can be better is not there. So
yes.
That, I think, that hope can come from a yoga class, from a single conversation. But it takes that one step that you have to attend that class or you have to reach out to a professional. And and we all have, you know, especially the people who are listening to this podcast, have the means to prioritize this before anything else, right? We have the means, we have the money, we have the tools to do that. So it's just about that thinking, you know, the thought should come that, hey, I should seek help because I can do better in my day, right? In my day to day. So I think that's really, really great. And I'm, as I said, I'm going to leave Dr. Raghav's details. And thank you, Dr. Raghav, for so much of your time. I know you're very busy and it's really wonderful that you took out time for us. And I hope this conversation reaches to a lot of people. We'll try our best. I hope people will seek help. Thank you.
I hope so. And it has been a pleasure talking to you. And to be very frank, I had been trying to get myself into a routine of yoga for quite a long, but it had not been possible. And that's when I realized that I should not take things lightly. And that's why I shared with people also that these are practices and practice develops over time. So I would be happy to learn some more of you through your app.
Great. I think, app is just one means you know, we will connect, and I hope we'll be able to help with yoga as many people as possible. Thank you so much, Dr. Raghav.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, bye.
Thank you.